This is Grow in Grace, a daily teaching ministry of Palmetto Baptist Church in Greenville, South Carolina. We know that God has given us His Word so we can know Him and how He wants us to live. Many places in Scripture are crystal clear, black and white. However, some passages can be difficult to understand. What are we supposed to do with these passages? Today, Pastor Sam Horn will begin to unpack one of these difficult passages in a sermon titled, The Cosmic Conflict. It's from Daniel chapter 7, verses 15 through 28. Let's listen together so we can grow in grace.
I'm going to invite you to turn in your Bible to Daniel chapter 7. As I've tried to make my way through this last half of the book, I have to say, and I think if you've been doing any reading ahead, and if you haven't, let me encourage you to spend some time in the last half of Daniel. As I've been working my way through these texts in preparation for what's to come, there have been just moments where I've just kind of had to step back and say, Lord, I don't know that I understand what is happening here. Because there are so many things that are so unfamiliar to my ear and even to my eye here in the 20th century or the 21st century. And I don't relate. I don't understand what I'm seeing. And we're going to discover that that is precisely how Daniel felt as he heard and as he saw what we're about to read. And so this morning, what I'd like to do is try to give us some framework for handling Daniel chapter 7. And I believe, as I've come to look at this chapter, it is a pivotal chapter in the book. It functions like a hinge. It takes us from the first half of the book, and you'll remember that the first half of the book was wisdom that God gave to the nations, nations that were in conflict with each other, nations that were raging against God and against His anointed and against His plan for the world. We see this in Psalm 2. That psalm opens up with these familiar words. Why do the nations rage? Why are they resisting? Why are they in chaos? Why have they arrayed themselves against the Most High? And that's precisely what we see in the first half of the book of Daniel. We see wisdom for those nations. And the wisdom is given particularly to the head of those nations, of all of the nations that are coming, the head of gold in the statue we saw in Daniel chapter 2 was the kingdom of Babylon, and precisely at the very top of that kingdom was King Nebuchadnezzar. And God said to Nebuchadnezzar in Daniel chapter 4, there's something that you must learn. And by the way, what God wanted Nebuchadnezzar to learn is the same thing that He wants you and I to learn, and that is simply this, that God reigns over the kingdoms of men. And we noted that it is one thing to acknowledge that there is a God in heaven and that He rules heaven, and that's one thing to acknowledge. And Nebuchadnezzar, throughout his time as the king of Babylon and the four chapters that came about where we read his story, we discovered that he was more than happy to acknowledge that. He was more than happy for God to reign in heaven. It was another thing entirely when the God of heaven wanted to reign over the kingdom that Nebuchadnezzar was ruling. And God said to Nebuchadnezzar, I'm going to ruthlessly pursue you until you know that I don't just rule in heaven, but I rule the kingdom of men. And so the first six chapters are all about that major lesson that God intends for the nations to understand. And it's not just Babylon in Daniel's day. It's all the nations. It's the nations that exist in the world of our day. God desires that all of those nations not just acknowledge His presence and not just concede that He rules in heaven, but God desires those nations to understand that He is sovereign over everything that happens in the kingdom of men. And then we come to the last half of the book, and we noted that this also is wisdom. This is a word of wisdom, but it's not for the nations in general. It's for a nation. It's for a particular group of people. It's for God's chosen people, which is why this part of the book is written in their language, in their familiar tongue. It's written in Hebrew. And God says to His people in the midst of all of that chaos, And everything that Daniel is about to see and hear, God says to his people, in the midst of everything that is coming, I want you to understand that I am in charge and that the kingdom I promised you matters more. And so if you want to understand the book of Daniel, that's really how the book plays out. And when we come to Daniel 7, it's the heart of that message. It's the pivotal moment in the book. And we're reading in chapter 7 about a vision that Daniel receives that's very similar to the one that he interpreted way back in the day of Nebuchadnezzar at the very beginning of his reign in Daniel chapter 2. And so as you kind of look at this vision in Daniel 7, there are some significant differences. But there are five major life-orienting realities, life-shaping truths that this vision is intended to communicate. Let me give them to you very quickly. Here's the first one. There are two kingdoms. There is the kingdom of heaven, and there is the kingdom of men. And we're going to see in the vision that the kingdom of men has different iterations. There is a kingdom in Nebuchadnezzar's day that is replaced by a kingdom in Darius and Cyrus' day. And then there's a kingdom that is coming that will be ruled by the Greeks. And then there's a kingdom coming that will be ruled by the Romans. And so there are iterations of the kingdom of men, but there are only two overarching kingdoms. There is the kingdom of men, and the Bible describes that kingdom as the kingdom of the world. This is what John meant when he recorded Jesus saying, "Do not love the what? Love not the world." He's talking about that kingdom and its ethos and everything that drives that kingdom. So there is the kingdom of men or the kingdom of the world, and then there is the kingdom that is established from heaven. It is the kingdom that is established by the one who sits on the throne. It is the kingdom that he promised to his son. And so there are only two kingdoms, the kingdom of men, the kingdom of the world, and the kingdom of God, or the kingdom of heaven. And you have to decide which one of those two kingdoms you're going to orient your life to. And so that's the first truth that we see in the book of Daniel. Second truth is this: those two kingdoms are in conflict with each other. They're at war with each other. And we're going to see this all throughout the book. They are at war with each other, and internally the kingdom of the world, those kingdoms are actually at war with each other. And so when you think about these two kingdoms, they are kingdoms in conflict. And then, as we have already seen, the third major idea in the book is that God rules over all that happens in both kingdoms. He is the king of the kingdom of heaven, and he is also sovereign over all that happens in the kingdom of men and all of its iterations. And then number four, God is working through human history for the good and the purposes of his kingdom. God is working through human history to establish his kingdom. That's what Romans 8:28 is all about. All things God is using to bring about good for his people and for the establishment of his kingdom. And then here's the final thing, and the thing I hope you and I never forget and we never take for granted, and that would so humble our hearts that we would sing like we sang this morning to the one who did all of this. It is God's pleasure to give to us his kingdom. This is what Jesus was talking about in Luke chapter 12, when he looked at his disciples who had given up everything in the kingdom of men. And he looks at them and he says this: "Do not be afraid, little flock. For it is the pleasure of the Father to give you the kingdom. You may live in the kingdom of men, but you have been given the kingdom that matters most. You have been given the kingdom of heaven." And these truths should shape our lives as we meditate on them. We should love the right kingdom. We should live distinctively As citizens of that kingdom, in the kingdom of the world, we should make the kingdom of heaven our primary focus and our chief pursuit. We should pray for its coming, and we should persevere through suffering with a wholehearted, single-focused, fully trusting faith that we learned about when we went together through the book of James. So that brings the question up, how do we do this? I mean, it's one thing to acknowledge the book of Daniel has these great realities. It's another thing to actually allow those realities to shape us so that we navigate strategically and successfully through the terrain that Daniel is about to unfold in the four visions that start in chapter 7 and end in chapter 12. How do we navigate that terrain as believers? And so we need a reliable roadmap, and we need confident assurance, and we need accurate information. As I was preparing for this message, I came across a reminder of something that I had read many years before, but I want to give it to you as an illustration. During World War II, the Nazis, the Germans, believed that they were invincible, and part of the reason for their confidence was a code machine that they had developed that they believed was invincible. It was unbreakable. It was called Enigma. Many of you have seen the movie The Imitation Game, which is all about how the British actually cracked this code and replaced it with their own called the Ultra System. This breakthrough didn't prevent the Allies from having to experience the hardships of war, but it gave them hope and confidence and ultimate victory because it gave them inside information. And these visions in Daniel 7 through 12, these four visions, are visions where God sends an angelic messenger, the angel Gabriel, and he is going to crack the Enigma code of the Bible. These visions are going to provide insight into the kingdom of the world and their relationship to God's kingdom, their posture toward God's people, and how God's kingdom will ultimately prevail. In fact, Revelation 11, verses 15 through 19, in a time far distant from the Apostle John, who saw that vision, records an angel announcing to the entire universe, the kingdom of the world has become the kingdom of his Son. And so you have this massive moment here in Daniel chapter 7 where you are given the controlling vision that is going to interpret all of the other three visions that are coming. Now you remember when we started Daniel chapter 7, we saw that the first half of the chapter, verses 1 through 14, really gave us the vision in four parts. It talked about four worldwide empires that were described as ferocious, ravenous beasts. We saw Babylon described as a lion. We saw Persia described as a bear. We saw Greece described as a leopard. And then there was this fourth kingdom, the kingdom of Rome, that is described as a fearful and fearsome dragon. The second part of that first half of the chapter, that second part of the vision, focused in on this fourth kingdom, the kingdom of Rome, this dragon that had 10 horns that represented 10 different kings and smaller kingdoms inside that large kingdom that would eventually be subdued and ruled by an 11th king, an arrogant and blasphemous king that would rise up and speak great and blasphemous things against God. So you have the first part of the vision are these four kingdoms, and then the second part of the vision focuses in on the fourth kingdom, and then it takes you immediately to a scene in heaven where you see a throne, and you see somebody sitting on that throne, the Ancient of Days, and before him are millions of servants who stand there ready to serve him and worship him. And someone called the Son of Man is formally presented to him. And he receives from the Ancient of Days a kingdom and dominion and glory and honor and a people. And he receives from all peoples, nations, and languages the rendering of the same worship that they give to the one on the throne. And so that's where we ended the vision. And now Daniel has questions about that vision. And so we want to look at Daniel's questions, and we want to see how God answers. And maybe the best way to do that this morning is to look at verses 15 through 22 as a group of verses that speak about the confusion in Daniel's heart. Notice verses 15 and 16 identify his concern. He says in verse 15, "As for me, Daniel." Now, it's interesting that he refers to himself like this twice in the chapter. It's as though he wants you and me to understand that there's something going on in his heart that he wants to make sure we don't miss. And what is going on in his heart and in his spirit is anxiety and alarm. "My spirit within me was anxious, and the visions of my head alarmed me. And so I approached one of those who stood there." Now remember, he's in the part of the vision where he is standing in heaven and he is watching what is going on around this throne where the Ancient of Days is. And he sees the Son of Man coming and being presented to him and receiving from him a kingdom and glory and dominion and worship. And he looks around and there are people, myriads of them, and some of them are angelic beings. And so he approaches in the vision one of these angels and he asks for an interpretation. And so let's stop for a moment and identify Daniel's concern. What was he concerned about? What was it that was making him anxious and alarmed? It wasn't that there were four kingdoms. He already knew that from what he had interpreted for Nebuchadnezzar in chapter 2. That was no surprise to him. It wasn't about the Ancient of Days because he had been serving that individual for his entire life. So the fact that there was a throne in heaven with the God of heaven seated on that throne may have been a new idea for Nebuchadnezzar, but it was a very old idea for the people of Israel, and it was a controlling idea for the prophet Daniel. So that wasn't what alarmed him. And it wasn't that there was a Son of Man who came and was presented to this Ancient of Days to receive a kingdom, because all through the written literature that God had given to his people, the Torah of God, there had always been the promise of the coming of a son who would bring those people back to the kingdom of Eden that had been lost when Adam and Eve listened to the voice of the serpent. And so none of that was new news to Daniel. None of that alarmed him. What alarmed him was something that he did not anticipate. And it's often the unanticipated things that alarm us and that trouble us. He was alarmed at the unexpected, unrestrained, and apparently unending hostility toward God's people by all of these kingdoms. And so he comes to the angel and he says to the angel, "I want to know the truth concerning all of this. I mean, I know about the kingdoms. I know about the one who sits on the throne. I know about the Son that is coming. But what I didn't expect and what I don't understand is the ferocity of the hostility that is against the people of God. I don't understand that." And so there is a big picture that comes in verse 17. And the big picture is simply the angel looking at Daniel and summing up the entire vision in two big ideas. Look at verse 17. "These four great beasts are four kings or four empires who will rise up out of the earth. But the saints of the Most High will receive the kingdom and possess the kingdom forever, forever and ever." Three times there is this statement that no matter what you see and no matter what happens with the kingdoms of men, these four kingdoms, Daniel, you need to know that the end has already been determined. Somehow the one sitting on the throne and the son standing before him are going to take the people of God and bring them back to the kingdom of Eden, the kingdom that matters most. And so in verses 19 through 22, Daniel has some further questions. He really wants to understand this big idea. And so in verse 19, he said, I desire to know the truth. And what he wants to know the truth about are three things. He wants to know about the nature of this fourth beast with 10 horns. He wants to know the identity of this 11th horn that comes up, this little horn. And by the way, let me just pause here and notice that, or make sure we understand that the word little in this text is not talking about tiny or insignificant. This horn, this ruler, is going to be the greatest ruler, the most arrogant ruler, the cruelest ruler, the most blasphemous ruler in the history of the kingdoms of the world. This is not talking about size. When this horn is described as little, when this kingdom and this king, whoever he is described as little, it's sort of a derogatory comment being made about him by the one sitting on the throne. In comparison to the Ancient of Days, who's been sitting on the throne long before there was a world even to rule, and in comparison to the majesty of the Son who stands before him, this arrogant ruler is little. And that's why he's described in this derogatory fashion by the Lord. And so as Daniel is asking about these things, I want to know about this fourth beast and the horns on its head, and then I want to know about this 11th horn that just comes out of nowhere and dominates the other three. But what I really want to know about is the war that this kingdom is going to wage against the saints of the Most High. And so the angel begins to answer Daniel in verse 23, and he reveals to Daniel and explains to Daniel the hostility of all of the kingdoms against God's enemies. And the first thing that he wants Daniel to understand is the origin of these kingdoms. They are all earthly kingdoms. Look at verse 3 of chapter 7. You'll notice that these four kingdoms rise up from the sea. There are four winds that blow, the sea churns, and out of the sea come these four kingdoms, or these four beasts. In Daniel chapter 7, verse 17, he describes them as rising up out of the earth. And there's no contradiction here. He's describing their chaotic nature. That's the idea of rising up out of the sea. And he's describing their thoroughly earthly origin, as opposed to the fifth kingdom that we're going to meet later in the chapter. And the origin of that kingdom is very different than the origin of the first four. The first four are earthly kingdoms. They have their source in the earth. Their reign is earthy. It's marked by the world and its demonic oversight. We're told in the New Testament something that Daniel is not told here. We're told that the kingdom of men is actually energized by someone who has been given temporary authority over that kingdom, and he's called the God of this world. And he's described as a dragon.
Thank you, Pastor Sam. We'll continue this sermon next time on Grow in Grace. Today's speaker is Dr. Sam Horn. He's the pastor for preaching and vision at Palmetto Baptist Church. PBC meets at 2730 Anderson Road, Greenville, South Carolina. If you live locally, come join one of our morning worship services at 9 or 10:45 a.m. every Sunday. You can find us online at pbcpowdersville.org. If you have any questions about today's message or about Palmetto Baptist Church, reach out to radio@pbcpowdersville.org. Grow in Grace is recorded by the audio team at PBC and produced by CJ Billieu. Join us again next time so together we can grow in grace.